It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for joining me as we prepare for that most joyous of seasons, the holiday season, which actually, I guess, we're in the midst of. So let me start off with something that is going around the country again. We've talked about it from time to time, and that is bird flu, or avian influenza, as it's called. Bird flu affects, in this case, waterfowl, ducks, geese, swans to some extent, but really it seems like geese are the primary species that are affected by bird flu, and there continues to be outbreaks of bird flu in isolated areas across the country. So as we move into a lot of areas where the highest and best quality goose hunting takes place in a lot of areas in Illinois from now going on to the end of January, I just wanted to remind individuals that when handling birds, it's best to handle them with gloves on. And when you have bare hands, to make sure you wash them thoroughly afterwards. And you should always sanitize your cleaning knives and sterilize them if possible. I think there's only ever been one or two cases of bird flu being transferred to humans, but it is serious for pets. And so for those of you who use retrievers, if you're in areas where there's bird flu, you want to be careful. And how do you know? How you know is, first of all, birds with bird flu behave very differently. They, in many cases, they act as though they can't fly, and they're lethargic, and they'll run from your dog or try to swim from your dog. Also, they, when they're flying, Canada geese in particular, look as though they're drunk. They lose their ability to fly evenly, and they fly tipping to the left and right very erratically. I have actually seen this a few times in the air with birds in a flock. But it's pretty hard to tell an infected bird with bird flu in hand. Usually they just die. So don't let your dog pick up a dead bird that you didn't shoot, and be very careful with washing your knives and washing your hands afterwards. Otherwise, the most important thing is to cook your game thoroughly. In the case of bird flu, you don't want to eat very rare meat from birds. You want to make sure that you cook it enough. I think you want to get it to at least a medium rare grade. Don't eat raw meat, and then never feed your animals, your pets, raw waterfowl scraps or anything like that, because that's for how they'll get it. So that's my note on bird flu. I have a remarkable story to say. You wish you were the legal counsel for the NRA. It just broke recently that the NRA, and this is hard to believe, in the last 5 years has spent $198 million in legal fees. Think about that. Here's an organization that is supposed to be advocating for the advancement of hunting in particular. That's how it actually started. It was not a gun rights organization to start with. It was an organization designed to advance hunting and safe hunting and hunting opportunity. It certainly has become known as the largest defender of the Second Amendment in America. The NRA is synonymous now with the Second Amendment, which is how they raised so much money. But it's also how they've spent so much money. So they have spent $198 million. So let's just round it up. $200 million in the last few years trying to defend themselves. It's unbelievable. So what's occurring as a result of that? The NRA is running massive deficits. It politically and membership-wise is just a shell of itself. The NRA's power in Washington has been greatly diminished with all the controversy surrounding them. And it, frankly, has lost a lot of credibility. But the question in the outdoor world is, who replaces them? The NRA is still the most powerful organization, even for hunting rights and for the Second Amendment, even if they are just a fraction of what they once were. It goes to show that there's really not a lot of depth. There are other organizations that, to some extent, are trying to step in. But they don't have the power of the NRA. They don't have the name brand of the NRA. And it will be interesting to see here with the change of administration and in the case of some states, change of the district attorneys, if there will continue to be this effort to get the NRA. And without mentioning names, it's clear that there were some very bad actors in senior positions at the NRA, and they've either been indicted or they've been fired or they, in some cases, are fighting convictions. But that an organization that cleanses itself of those people deserves a second chance. And the NRA, for those of us who love to hunt and love the outdoors and want to have our rights secured, really has to succeed. So one way to succeed is stop spending $200 million on legal fees. And that's just an exorbitant amount of money under any calculation, Fortune 500 company, Fortune whatever company. But for the NRA to do that as a not-for-profit organization is disgraceful. And I think it goes to show just how poorly run the NRA has been over years to have to get into those kind of legal expenses. Now the NRA is trying to turn the page. They badly need to. As I said, their membership is shrinking. They're running deficits. This can't go on forever. And we'll see what the new leadership of the NRA is. But it is clear that the NRA needs to change course, or they're simply going to become completely irrelevant, even more so than they are now. Colorado. What do we know about Colorado? And why am I talking about Colorado? Because it's an interesting thing that's happened in Colorado, and that is that it appears that some members of the Colorado Fish and Wildlife, they call it the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission, commissioners, held meetings that violated the Open Meetings Acts in their efforts to move forward the ballot initiative, which would have banned mountain lion and bobcat hunting in the state of Colorado. This initiative was absolutely drubbed at the ballot box. It was soundly defeated. It was not backed by science. It was simply backed by animal rights extremists who want to basically end hunting and trapping and wildlife management really across America. Their belief is that just let things be and everything will be fine. Well, the next time you slam into a deer on a road, think about that. Or the next time you have a disease outbreak, think about that. Next time we have overpopulation issues, same thing. Think about that. Wildlife management is an absolutely integral part of what we need to do in America. But in Colorado, they tried to turn off the mountain lion and bobcat hunting, and in fact make it be illegal, which is interesting because in Colorado they're also trying to bring back the sage grouse, the greater sage grouse, which is being rapidly depleted. Why? In part because bobcats are eating them. So there were a couple of wildlife commissioners that held meetings that in preparation for the publishing of an op-ed supporting Proposition 127. So these are commissioners who actually supported the anti-hunting, anti-trapping, anti-management proposition in Colorado, and yet they're on the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission. But they held meetings that were not open to the public, violated the Open Meeting Act, and as a result, Safari Club International is suing them to have them thrown off the commission. I hope they succeed, not because of their views, but because of the fact that they violated a public trust. And in Illinois, I served on the Conservation Board for many, many years under two different governors, and I can tell you that we took very seriously what we could do in open meetings and what we couldn't. And while we may not have agreed on things, we always agreed in open forum. We didn't do things behind a closed door. And what about the other commissioners in Colorado who thought that this amendment was a terrible idea, having to sit at a table with commissioners they knew were working behind their back and violating the state law? So Safari Club International is going after them. A big issue. And I mean a really big issue, which I'll come to when I come back from the break, is the idea of a road going through one of the most pristine areas in Alaska. I'll talk about that when I come back. I'm also going to talk about obstacles for a new administration, and I'm going to preface that by saying there have always been obstacles for a new administration. Every outgoing administration, when the parties in leadership change hands, has done everything they possibly can to gum up the works of the incoming administration. We just know more about it now because we have greater access to information. But this is not new. And so as we think about all the things being said about how the Trump administration is being hamstrung, which is true, it's really true, the shoe's on the other foot as well when administrations change the other way. I don't think it's a good thing at all to do, but we'll talk more about that when we come back and maybe some of the things that can be done about it. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. I'm going to take you to Alaska, a place that I dearly love, and I'm sure many of you do too. And if you have not been to Alaska, well, it's a little hard to say I've been to Alaska and only been there once because unless you spend months traveling around the state, which is our largest state in the union, you really don't get a big idea about how big the state is and how many issues there are. The issues from fisheries in the southeast are different from the issues in fisheries and around Bristol Bay, which are different from big game management. In the Yukon, it's an incredible state with incredible resources. And there are a lot of people that want to protect those resources. I'm one of them. I'm also an individual who believes that we have to have sensible wildlife management that works with industry, because we can't just lock things up and throw away the key and expect America to be able to go forward. So as you've heard me many times talk, say I come from the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation School of Management, which our wildlife resources are to be managed in a sustainable and responsible way. So with that background, in June of this past year, so just 6 months ago, the Bureau of Land Management, who often, you know, I find a reason to disagree with them, this time I didn't, blocked a proposal to construct a 211-mile road through Alaska's Brooks Range. This is a complete area that has no roads, no access other than float plane or helicopter or boat. It's one of the most remote places on Earth. The project, which is known as the Ambler Road, would have given mining companies access to copper deposits that are worth more than $7 billion. Hunting and fishing conservation groups widely opposed this plan, and they were very active in getting the BLM to block it. And they cited, as they often do, but in this case they really had a lot of evidence, the potential for negative impacts on the pristine fish and wildlife habitat. So it was of the Brooks Range, which is the most pristine in the world in many ways. However, fast forward to now, and you won't believe this, an amendment in the Senate bill of the National Defense Authorization Act would rescind the Bureau of Land Management's recent decision not to build the Amber Road and would force the Department of Interior to permit the Amber Road. So the Defense Department, obviously that means some lobbyists got in there, some senators got in there, some congressmen got in there, and they got an appropriations in a must-pass bill as part of the Senate of the Defense Department bill to build a road in Alaska to open up mineral deposits of copper. I have a problem with that. And the problem really is, let's do this in an open way. The BLM went through a totally transparent process as to why the road should or shouldn't be built. And it was agreed it should not be. And by the way, the BLM is not necessarily a group that is a friend of environmental organizations by any means. And then in the dark of night in a back room, and the Defense Department sticks a bill in requiring that this road be built. This road would have over 3,000 stream crossings. 3,000 culverts, bridges would need to be built for this road, 210 miles long. Think about how many crossings that is every mile. If they do build the road, all of us, all of you listening, including myself talking, should get the contract to build those crossings. 3,000 crossings in 210 miles. That's a lot of culverts. That's a lot of bridges. And no wonder they believe it has such a strong negative impact to conservation and the environment. So we're going to see what happens. Right now, it's in the bill. It's in a must-pass Defense Department bill, but it really brings out why do we allow this to happen in Congress? And maybe after January 20th, things will be different. I don't think they're going to be terribly different, and I'm sure most of you listening don't think they're going to be terribly different. The world hasn't changed that quickly. One election, a lot of talk about how different things are going to be, but they are not going to get rid of lobbyists, special interests, and people are going to find ways to insert things into bills that have absolutely nothing to do with legislation, because that's the way Congress works, unfortunately. Which brings me to a subject that I do want to touch on for a moment, which is changing from one administration to the next. I, for one, don't know how you feel, but I, for one, feel it's really odd that we have an election in early November, and it takes 10 weeks to bring a new administration in. And I don't care what your political parties are, Republican, Democrat, Independent. Well, if Independent, you're not a political party, but Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. We are giving those in power who have been thrown out of power 10 weeks to just mess everything up, jam the gears, put through executive orders, try to write legislation, do everything they can to make it miserable for the incoming administration. As I said before the break, this has been going on forever. When parties switch, they try to make sure the incoming party has the most difficult time it possibly can getting its agenda through. I want to talk for a moment about what this means for Interior and conservation. You cannot have a 10-week period where there are thousands of bureaucrats who are political appointments, not civil servants, but political appointments, doing everything they can every waking hour to make sure that their agenda, which the voters threw out, continues to be put in force. That's exactly what we're seeing right now, and in particular we're seeing it because the incoming administration in Congress is going to be very different on its view on environmentalism, and I use that word carefully, not conservation, but environmentalism. They are going to be very different in how they approach what laws they want to see remain intact. So there's a lot of mischief going on. I've heard about some of it, which is really just unbelievable. You can Google some of it, but basically my information comes from the individuals I know in Washington who I've known for a long time. We have such an ideological shift coming in the country that there is this opportunity, unfortunately, for those who are still there for another few weeks to do everything they can to make it miserable and difficult. And in fact, sometimes will actually make it very difficult legally for the incoming administration to do things on conservation and many of the things that we talk about for streamlining and making conservation more effective, more accountable, more cost efficient. I'll be back next week with much more on the Great Outdoors Show, and you're definitely going to want to hear what I have to say about the American Society for Preservation to Cruelty for Animals. You won't believe the pay those people are making. Thanks for listening. Have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.